This is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman. Returning to Rome from Ireland, Pope Francis told reporters he will not offer a comment on an 11-page document by a former senior Vatican official about a cover-up of sexual abuse in the Roman Catholic Church. Statement accused the Pope of knowing of allegations for years and called on him to resign. During a mass in Dublin, the Pope asked for forgiveness for the Church not showing compassion towards survivors of abuse and towards those looking for justice, truth, and action. Head of Amnesty International Ireland joined the thousands of protesters who marched in Dublin against the Vatican's role in abuses committed by priests. Cathal O'Gorman said it was good the Pope acknowledged the crimes of the clergy.
What the Pope didn't acknowledge today, yet again, was the central responsibility of the Vatican for a policy and a process of directly, willfully, determinedly covering up those crimes and seeking to protect the institutions of the Church.
Hundreds gathered at the site of a former church-run home for unwed mothers whose children were put up for forced adoption, reciting the names of hundreds of babies and young children who died there. In Zimbabwe, Emmerson Mnangagwa has been sworn in as president. This followed the Constitutional Court confirming him as president, dismissing a challenge by opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. Mnangagwa won 50.8% of the vote, but his inauguration was postponed because of the court challenge. Mnangagwa urged the country to unite behind him. He also vowed to revive the economy, settle outstanding debts, and called for an independent inquiry into the army crackdown against protesters following the July 30th vote that left six dead. This is VOA News. Here in the U.S., flags are at half-mast at the White House and at the Capitol building here in Washington, building as the country pays tribute to 81-year-old Arizona Senator John McCain, who died following a year-long battle with brain cancer. His fellow Arizona Senator Jeff Flake was asked who might replace McCain.
And he expressed at that time his optimism that others would come to the fore, that at some point the voters would value people who can govern and who reach across the aisle and see good in their opponents. And so I think that that's certainly his legacy. And I do believe that others will stand up.
McCain also remembered by political opponents like Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
The typical thing for politicians to do is weigh the political consequences and then decide whether to do the right thing. John McCain would decide to do the right thing and then deal with the political consequences afterwards. And his ability to speak truth to power, which is all too rare and missed a commodity these days, was incredible.
A memorial service for McCain will be held on Saturday at Washington's National Cathedral, and he will be accorded the rare tribute of lying in state at the Capitol Rotunda. He will be buried at the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland on September the 2nd. A judge in Myanmar has delayed until September 3rd the verdict that has been expected for today against two Reuters journalists accused of possessing, that is, official documents illegally in a case that's drawn attention to the faltering state of press freedom in Myanmar. The journalists have pleaded not guilty to violating the colonial-era Official Secrets Act, which carries a penalty of up to 14 years in prison. They were arrested in December and have been detained since. Reporters contend they were framed by police while reporting on Myanmar's crackdown on the Rohingya Muslim in Rakhine State that were forced, about 700,000 of them, to cross over into Bangladesh. A gunman opened fire on an online video game tournament that was happening at a shopping center in the U.S. city of Jacksonville, Florida, killing two, wounding nine before taking his own life. The shooter was identified as 24-year-old David Katz of Baltimore. Mike Williams is sheriff of Jacksonville.
So I'll not be discussing any details pertaining to the motive at this time, as that part of the investigation is still ongoing.
Local news media said the shooter had been competing and lost, then apparently targeted other players and then killed himself. Prolific award-winning American playwright Neil Simon, who wrote The Odd Couple, Barefoot in the Park, Lost in Yonkers, Goodbye Girl, many more, has died at age 91. I'm Steve Norman, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, August 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan parties return to the negotiating table this week in Khartoum. But will this round of talks bring peace?
It's good to be optimistic, but we must also be realistic. When we talk about peace in South Sudan, we must talk about peace in South Sudan in the context of the laws that are going to govern the peace, which is what the negotiations are about.
Mabio Garan de Mabio is chair of the SPLM-RO National Committee for Information and Public Relations. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is in Washington and will weigh in on peace in South Sudan. The party of Jean-Pierre Bemba will appeal the Electoral Commission's decision to reject his participation in the December election. And Emmerson Mnangagwa has been sworn in as President of Zimbabwe with a call for national unity.
We are all Zimbabweans. What unites us is greater than what could ever divide us.
And the death toll rises from the latest Ebola outbreak in the DRC. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, SPLM-IO, says the group is eager to end the war and the suffering of the people. But Mabio Garan de Mabio, chair of the SPLM-IO National Committee for Information and Public Relations, says the Juba government has not been negotiating in good faith. His comments came as South Sudan parties are set to resume negotiation this week in Khartoum to iron out unresolved issues like power sharing in the presidency, the number of states the country should have, and many others. If the parties can reach a consensus, a final peace deal could be signed this week. Mabio says the war could end this week if there is a commitment from the South Sudan government.
Well, it has been a very confusing peace process for many people. And I can only tell you what we know as the facts. Right now, we are dealing with Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 of the revitalized ISIS, and we will wait for IGAD to give us direction on what we are going to do with the rest of the chapters. But if a situation arises where we only deal with Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 and we sign an agreement and go to Juba, then this would be really a new agreement and it will not be a revitalized ISIS. And we are fully committed to what is happening in Khartoum in the context of the greater IGAD peace process, and we will continue to negotiate in good faith.
Mr. Mabio, before I even go further, I do follow the crisis in South Sudan. And just listening to you, I seem to be very confused. So let me ask just one basic question. The revitalization that is starting this week in Khartoum, is that a continuation of the process that was being carried on by the former Botswana president, Mohai, or is the one now being taken over by President Bashir and Museveni? Is that process different from the one that was being conducted by Mohai?
I think this question is better directed to the IGAD, but according to what we understand, we know that what is happening in Khartoum is part of the greater IGAD peace process, and we don't understand it as a separate process by President Museveni and President Bashir. Countries, of course, have national interest, and of course, every country will want to work according to what is in their national interest. That is just politics. But what we do know is that this is an IGAD peace process, and we are committed to that. And if it comes to something else, then we will see if that comes to something else. We get our direction from IGAD.
So going into this week, Khartoum revitalization, have you all been able to resolve the issue of, say, the sharing of powers between President Salva Kiir and your leader, Riek Machar?
No, these are the contentious issues that are now going to start this week. I don't want to preempt the process and talk about it, but these are some of the agendas that are supposed to be finalized.
So there are a whole lot of grievances that are yet to be resolved.
Yes, that is correct.
And the issue also, the number of states in the country,
yeah,
that has also not been resolved.
It has not been resolved, but of course it is clear in the collapsed ISIS that it was based on 10 states. Of course, we want to end the war and the suffering of our people, so we have been as flexible as we possibly can, you know, and so we continue to negotiate in good faith with the regime because it is our belief that it is only through dialogue that we will be able to resolve the problem. But legally speaking, it is very clear what should happen.
Mr. Mabio, there are a whole lot of people in South Sudan and around Africa and the rest of the world who are thinking and are hoping that finally this week you and the government in Juba are finally going to sign an agreement that can put this issue to rest. Are they being too over-optimistic?
It's good to be optimistic, but we must also be realistic. When we talk about peace in South Sudan, we must talk about peace in South Sudan in the context of the laws that are going to govern the peace, which is what the negotiations are about. And so in order for us to continue negotiating, for us to reconcile, will take time. But the war can end if there's a will from the government.
Mambio Garande Mambio is chair of the SPLM-IO National Committee for Information and Public Relations. He was speaking with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta says he and other leaders of the regional group, Intergovernmental Authority on Development, known as IGAD, are committed to ensure that peace and stability return to South Sudan. To achieve that, Mr. Kenyatta says IGAD should continue to put pressure on all parties in the South Sudan conflict, that it is their responsibility to find a workable framework for peace. President Kenyatta is in Washington and will be meeting this week with U.S. President Donald Trump. In this exclusive interview with viewers Esther Gitui Ewart, Mr. Kenyatta says his talks with President Trump will focus on security and trade.
Well, the talks will largely be centered on our security cooperation, but more importantly on how to boost our trade and investment, given the fact that the United States is one of our biggest trading partners. We have had a long, solid foundation of partnership that stretches all the way back to our independence. And I think our objective is to see how we can strengthen that, how we can deepen that for the mutual benefit of our two countries. We want to see how we can improve our trade links. We want to see how we can encourage more American investment into Kenya, take advantage of the reforms that we have made, especially over the last 4 years, but also the infrastructural development that has been put in place. And we want Americans to come and take advantage of these activities, encourage more companies to come in to take advantage not just of the reforms and the infrastructure development, but also Kenya's location.
Now let's go back to Kenya and your efforts to fight corruption in the country from the high level to every fiber of the society in Kenya. Do you feel confident that you're going to win this war?
I believe we're going to win this war. There is tremendous commitment, I think, now from the agencies that have been involved in this work. In that end also, we appreciate especially the support that we've gotten from the United States, both of capacity building and training and involvement of their officers from the FBI. The political commitment is there. The will of the people of Kenya is committed to see an end to corruption. And I believe that this time we shall succeed in our endeavors.
Now, moving on to the regional issues, we've seen South Sudan ink deals about peace in that country, which never took place. Now, they just inked another deal. Do you feel confident that this time round there will be peace in South Sudan and that President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar will hold the country together?
It is impossible for me to say that I believe it will or it will not. But what I can say is that we are committed to working together with our regional brothers and sisters to ensure that peace and stability returns to South Sudan. And we will try anything that will achieve that. Because for most of us in the region, our greatest concern is not about the leadership of the country, but to ensure that the people of South Sudan, who have had to endure untold suffering for many years after struggling to achieve their independence, are able to achieve the fruits that they struggled for when they sought to liberate themselves. And this is what Kenya is committed to. This is what I believe our colleagues in the region are committed to. And we will try everything. And we must, therefore, put our hope and faith and continue to put pressure on the leadership of South Sudan from all sides, that it is their ultimate responsibility to ensure they come together and find a framework that works to restore peace and stability and ultimately human dignity to the people of South Sudan.
That's Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta speaking in an exclusive interview with viewers Esther Gitui Ewart in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Monday, August 27th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Emmerson Mnangagwa was sworn in Sunday as Zimbabwe's new president. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Mr. Mnangagwa is calling for unity.
I, Emmerson Dambudzo Mnangagwa, swear that as President of Zimbabwe, I will be faithful to Zimbabwe and will obey, uphold, and defend the Constitution and all other laws of Zimbabwe. So help me God.
Emmerson Mnangagwa takes the oath of office from Chief Justice Luke Malaba while thousands of Zimbabweans cheer to start his five-year term in office. Friday, the same judge confirmed Mnangagwa's July 30th victory over Nelson Chamisa of the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance. Chamisa sought the poll's nullification, accusing the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission of rigging for the ruling ZANU-PF presidential candidate Mnangagwa. In his inaugural speech Sunday, Mnangagwa asked his political foes to bury their differences for the task ahead.
We are all Zimbabweans. What unites us is greater than what could ever divide us. Let me assure you that tomorrow is brighter than yesterday. Let us look forward to a journey ahead, a journey we will walk together as one people, a united people. Together, let us explore new frontiers in every facet and sphere of our economy and society.
The Movement for Democratic Change Alliance boycotted an invitation to the inauguration. The party wants to take its objections to the election to the African Union, led by Rwanda's Paul Kagame, who, with President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa, Edgar Lungu of Zambia, and Joseph Kabila of the Democratic Republic of Congo, was among leaders attending the inauguration in Harare. The opposition says the Constitutional Court should have nullified Mnangagwa's victory after the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission twice revised the July 30th presidential election results. Movement for Democratic Change Alliance Secretary General Douglas Munzora says the swearing-in does not finalize the political dispute.
That means, therefore, that the political issue still remains, and there are a lot of solutions that can be found. Whatever we are going to do, we are going to do these things within the law. Legal solutions does not mean going to court only. It means exercising the rights in terms of the Constitution of Zimbabwe. We have the right to demonstrate peacefully, of course. There are other solutions that can be found to the Zimbabwean problem, because the Zimbabwean problem has not gone away.
Mnangagwa read a letter he said was from former leader Robert Mugabe, explaining he did not attend the Sunday event because he's ill. Mugabe's daughter attended the inauguration. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, former warlord Jean-Pierre Bemba's political party says it will challenge the decision of the country's electoral commission to reject Bemba's candidacy in the coming December 23rd presidential election. The commission said Bemba was not qualified to run because he had been convicted by the International Criminal Court, the ICC, in March 2018 for bribing witnesses. But the ICC had overturned Bemba's conviction for war crimes. Andre Alain Atundu, a spokesman for DRC President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition.
First of all, the Electoral Commission delivered the list of the candidates for running presidency. And in this list, Mr. Bemba is not. Why? Because he was sentenced to 5 years for witness corruption. And according to our electoral law, if someone is sentenced for corruption, he cannot run any election. That's why Mr. Bemba is not in the list.
May I ask you, because your candidate, the candidate of the Common Front for Congo Coalition, Mr. Shadari, he himself has been sanctioned by the European Union So does he qualify to run?
Yes, of course, because Union European sanctions are not Congolese laws. It doesn't impeach someone to run when you have sanctions against you by another country. You are free to run in Congo. You know, European Union sanction is political sanction. It's not a sentence from a court. Anyhow, Mr. Bemba has the opportunity and the right to claim to constitutional court in order to hope that he could run again.
This is how some people see it, that this is all part of a plot by your coalition, by Mr. Kabila, to get rid of those people like Katumbi and Bemba who pose a threat to your candidate, Mr. Shadari.
If you are talking very seriously, I'm very embarrassed because Mr. Katumbi, his case is different from the case of Mr. Bemba. For Mr. Katumbi, he has no sure identity. At this stage, at this moment we are speaking, we can tell if Mr. Katumbi is a Congolese, if he's a Zambian or an Italian, because he has three nationality. That's the main reason for Mr. Katumbi. To run, you have to have only one Congolese nationality.
Andre Alain Atundu is the spokesman for DRC President Joseph Kabila's ruling coalition. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The current Ebola outbreak in the DRC has reached a new level, as at least one probable case has been reported in a highly insecure area, North Kivu, surrounded by militia. Health NGO Alima is part of the international response for Ebola patient treatment. Alima's Secretary General, Augustin Agio, tells viewers Bria Ricky Shryak that there is a risk the outbreak will last longer because healthcare workers will have less access to Ebola patients in a militarized zone.
So the Congolese Ethics Committee have authorized 5 experimental drugs to be used on Ebola confirmed patients. Alima have decided to use one in what we call a monitored emergency use protocol, meaning that we are providing one experimental drug, the remdesivir, but we are really monitoring the patient to make sure that it does not create harm more than benefits for the people who have Ebola on the ground.
Another interesting device that Alima is using is the cube. Can you tell me a little bit about what this cube is? I know it wasn't used in the 2014 outbreak.
Yeah, in the 2014 and 15 outbreak in West Africa, we all realize that when you have to put the protective equipment, it's like 47 degrees under that, and it's very difficult to really take care of the patients. You can see them maybe 3 times 5 minutes during a day while they are very severely ill, and they need much more attention and supportive care. So we just thought that instead of isolating the doctors and the nurses, we should isolate the patients. So we created the cube. It's a 9 square meters room in which we put the patients, and it's transparent. So all the medical staff can see the patient, and there is like a glove box, so they can enter and touch the patient and provide him with drugs and follow up his condition without having to put the full, what we call PPE, personal protective equipment. And at the same time, the family of the patient can come, see what we are doing, speak with their relatives. And that does, it's very useful for the community to trust the medical action that we are having to save the patient. The overall idea that we had is we've seen that people who've been treated in the US or in Europe for Ebola have 1 chance out of 10 of dying. People who are treated in Africa have 7 chance out of 10, meaning 7 times more chance to die.
One of the issues in North Kivu, of course, is insecurity. How are you guys working within those challenges?
So far, for the first 3 weeks of this outbreak, almost all of the cases came from areas that are easily accessible, where there is no military operations. So it was okay. But in the last week, we had at least one case coming from a much more complicated area where there are some military operations. What it implies is that it's going to be very difficult for the Ministry of Health, for the NGOs and the World Health Organization to go into those areas. The risk for the people is that we won't be able to access them and treat them. There is a higher risk, which means that in terms of public health, the outbreak could last much longer because it could have transmission chains that we cannot control because we can't do the sensitization, the vaccination, and the contact tracing in those areas.
That was Augustin Agio, Health NGO Alima Secretary General. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Paris. Time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin in Liberia, where President George Weah last Friday bestowed the country's highest honor on former Arsenal manager Arsene Wenger. Wenger was admitted into the Humane Order of African Redemption with the grade of Knight Commander, which is Liberia's highest honor. Wenger was honored for his contribution to the development of African football talents, including President George Weah. Wenger is credited for recruiting the then young George Weah at AS Monaco from Cameroon and turned him into a world-class footballer. Weah went on to become the only African to date to become the world's best footballer in 1995. Wenger described President Weah as a man who loves his country.
I know as well that through your history you had to show a huge love for your country. And I must say, during that difficult period when I had the Liberian players, and especially George, I was always impressed by the love for the country. And that certainly, that passion that got you through such a difficult period. And I must say, when you look back, I hope that you suffered a lot, and I wish that in the future and under the guidance of George, you will have a great future because you deserve it.
Also honored was Togolese national team coach Claude Roy, who received the award of Knight Commander, Humane Order of African Redemption. And now to Kenya, where Gor Mahia clinched the Kenyan Premier League title with 6 games to go after beating arch-rivals AFC Leopards 2-0 in the much-measured derby on Sunday at the Kasarani Stadium. Goals from Boniface Omondi and Bernard Oindek saw the league champions complete a double over their arch-rivals, having beaten them 2-1 in the first round. Dylan Kerr is the head coach of Gor Mahia FC.
Come on, you can't play this game and not win the league against your rivals. I mean, we'll never see that in another lifetime. I'll not be here, I'll not be alive if, when that happens again, to win the title against your rivals. It's a dream come true, and they've done it.
His opposite number, Rodolfo Zapata, was gracious in defeat.
I think that we play fair half an hour excellent football. We create so many opportunities. We did a couple of mistakes. And the second half, we create so many opportunities. But there are no excuses. We lost. And I want to congratulate Gor Mahia. And I wish them all the best in the international competition.
Staying in East Africa, Kampala Capital City Authority Football, KCCAFC, emerged winners of the inaugural Pilsena Super 8 Cup after defeating Onduparaka FC 2-0 in the final played at the Mutesa 2 Stadium in Wankulukulu on Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, August 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Butte, wishing you a productive week.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour. Oh. Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London. Twitter at Border Crossings or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.